We're studying 3 John, as was announced. Probably hardly ever do you hear a lesson on 2 and 3 John. There are, I think, 5 one-chapter books in the Bible. And Philemon, 2 John, 3 John, Jude, and Obadiah from the Old Testament, I believe it is. And so hardly ever do we have a lesson on those, especially some of those shorter ones. But the writer of this epistle is John the son of Zebedee. At least that's what's thought by most. He was the brother of James. He was an apostle of Jesus, of course, and one of the, what I refer to and others as the inner three. Whenever Jesus was away with just a part of the disciples or just a small number of them, it would be Peter, James, and John, usually. he's the writer of the book of John that bears his name, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, and the book of Revelation. He's thought to be the last apostle to die. The last apostle to die, or the last apostle alive. And he's thought to have written the book of Revelation some years after he wrote these other books. John is usually thought of as the apostle of love. We'll go throughout the book of John. He talks about love. If we go through the book of 1 John, he talks a lot about love. But when he comes to 2 John and 3 John, he emphasizes a different word. And the word truth is used over and over again. And normally, when a word is used again and again and again and again in a book, it's good to ask the question, well, why do I think he's doing that? There are false teachers abounding. There were people teaching error. There weren't enough people who were standing up for the truth and who were filling their lives and their thoughts and their understanding with truth. And that's happening today. I think we can see that that's clearly happened today. A lot of folks know what the, quote, churches of Christ or their particular religious group stand for, but many times they only know what their religious group stands for based upon what they've read, that some of the preachers, the ministers of that group have written, or sermons that they've heard, not the Bible itself. And that's very perplexing. But it was happening back at John's time. You think that in the first century, one or two generations after Jesus' death, that people would have no problem understanding that the truth was essential. John also, the book of John also spoke of truth. He said, "You shall know the truth, and truth shall make you free. Sanctify them through thy word. Thy word is truth." There may be other times the word truth. So he was one who emphasized truth. For if it was anything that the early Christians need and that Christians need today, it was for us to remember that there is something called the truth. Most folks think it's some kind of abstract idea and that there's no such thing as truth. That there's no such thing as truth. And that throws a lot of people off because they think if there's no such thing as truth, then it doesn't matter what I think because what I think could just be as good as anybody else's idea. Let's look at the 3 John. We'll probably look at the book of Jude, which is another short chapter. One chapter. The no chapter books of the Bible. I have one chapter and my 25 verses. We'll look at it. We'll probably look at it next week. Let's read the 14 verses. Basically, John is going to refer to 3 individuals. Gaius, Diotrephes, and Demetrius. So 3 individuals to focus the bulk of his of his writing around those three and telling us about those three individuals. Not giving a whole lot of details, but letting us know a little bit about their character and the example or their lack of an example, good or bad, there in the first century. The elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. For I rejoiced greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth. That's the second time that the word truth is used. I came and testified of the truth that is in thee, even as thou walkest in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Beloved, thou doest faithfully whatsoever thou doest to the brethren and to strangers, which have borne witness of thy charity, their manner of life, the way he has lived before the church, whom if thou bring forward on their journey after godly sort, thou shalt do well. Because that for his name's sake, they went forth taking nothing of the Gentiles. This would be those who would go out and preach and teach. Verse 8, he'll conclude his thoughts on directly to Gaius, about Gaius. We therefore ought to receive such that we might be fellow helpers to the truth. Verse 9, man's going to talk about Diotrephes. I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loveth to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds, which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words, and not content therewith. Neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. Beloved, follow not that which is evil. Still on the same subject. But that which is good. He that doeth good is of God. But he that doeth evil hath not seen God. Now switches gears again, talking about Demetrius. Verse 12. Demetrius hath good report of all men and of the truth itself. Yea, and we also bear record, and ye know that our record is true. I had many things to write, but I'll not with ink and pen write unto thee, but I trust I shall shortly see thee, and we will speak face to face. Peace be to thee, our friends, salute thee, greet the friends by name. So fairly short, fairly sweet letter to this individual by the name of Gaius from John, who I'm assuming that he uses the word elder there, referring to his age as compared, I suppose, to Gaius, calling him the well-beloved. In fact, he calls him well-beloved, and then down in verse 5, he calls him beloved, and then in verse 11, he may or may not be talking to Gaius, he may be talking to others who will read, he calls him and or them again beloved. So these individuals, these men were close. What guess is this? Well, there are three or four mentioned in the Bible. In Acts chapter 19, verse 29, we have a reference to Gaius. Acts chapter 19, verse 29. I think they're in Ephesus, where they also had a Demetrius. But Gaius is, in verse 29, says, the whole city of Ephesus, was filled with confusion, and having caught Gaius and Aristarchus, men of Macedonia, Paul's companions in travel, they rushed with one accord into the theater. So Gaius was one of the individuals that was taken, at the time when Paul was not taken, by some individuals in the city of Ephesus. We're not sure it's the same Gaius, though. It could have been. There was, as Gaius also mentioned in chapter 20 and verse 4, there were a number of men accompanying Paul, some of which may have been keeping him, quote, company. Others may have been there because of the bounty that he was taking to Jerusalem, to the needy saints in Jerusalem. And we find that there is, among all those names, some of which I have difficulty pronouncing, there's the word Gaius of Derbe, mentions Timothy or Timotheus, and Tychicus and Trophimus. And they tarried for Paul and were waiting for him at Troas. Also in 1 Corinthians 1, 14, we run across one individual's name as we studied the book of 1 Corinthians on Wednesday night. There was a Gaius that Paul baptized. After he was talking to the, writing to the church at Corinth about the division they were having by saying that some of them were Paul and some were Apollos, some of Cephas, some of Christ, and Paul asked a bunch of questions, among which, were you baptized in the name of Paul? And then he said, I thank God that I baptized none of you but Crispus and Gaius, and then he later mentions the household of Stephanus. So Gaius was one of the individuals at Corinth that was specifically baptized by Paul. This could be the one. We don't know whether the one from Macedonia or Derbe was baptized by Paul, but we do know that the book of 3 John later says something about Paul's children in verse 4. And usually I think he thinks of those as his children, as those that he has taught. Timothy was his child in the faith. Whether he baptized him, I don't know, but he was one instrumental in teaching him and instructing him, likely beyond the first principles. So we don't know exactly who the Gaius is, and it really doesn't matter. Some have thought maybe he was an elder of the church because of the nature of the nature of the letter, the nature of what is talked about in the letter, the nature. The material that we'll talk about next, when we get down to Diotrephes, would not be something you'd probably be writing a letter to everybody at a particular congregation. This would be somebody who was able to process it and able to perhaps help Paul in some manner as they deal with this situation. So we don't know who the Gaius is. The purpose for the letter, primarily I think, is to encourage Gaius to point out some difficulty with Diotrephes and then to give a reference, you might say, to a man by the name of Demetrius. It's thought that perhaps Demetrius was traveling and was going to be visiting their town. And that Paul would give him this good report, tell about his good report among all men and let them know what a good fellow he was before he got there. So we look back again, following the outline, following my outline. The writer again, John the Elder, to whom written Gaius, the well-beloved and loved in the truth. The truth. Emphasis upon the truth again. And note something that I brought out in classes we studied before. Normally, this is not a prayer that we pray. Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prosper. A lot of times we're concerned with the soul, but here Paul says, you know, you're leading a very spiritual life on a high spiritual plane, but I pray that your health will get better. I pray that your health will get better. Obviously, this man was instrumental in the direction or the growth of the church, whatever congregation he was with, and so Paul was trusting that he would have good health so he could continue to do the good deeds and set the good example that he was setting. So he said that, and I've always thought too, what if I got a letter from someone saying, I heard you were sick, and I pray that your health will become as well off as your soul is. And where someone would recognize us or recognize me as someone who was spiritually minded, someone who had grown spiritually throughout the years. And they weren't interested in saying, Jim, you need to become stronger in Christ. You need to be more involved in the work of the church. You need to be involved in the teaching of the gospel. But rather the person would be concerned with my health and state, and you know that your soul prospers, obviously. And Paul says, I rejoice. And what did he rejoice about? His joy, and I think I wrote these four things down. He rejoiced, number one, to hear that Gaius walks in the truth. He's just grateful to hear that someone that evidently he has taught, the one who he's acquainted with, that he's walking in the truth. And I think he emphasizes the truth because there likely were so many who were walking in error. Peter had said that there would be false teachers to come along. And there are several warnings in the book of Hebrews how the church, the congregations, were not growing as they should. The church at Corinth. But here is an individual who had grown spiritually. And Paul was saying, you know, I'm thankful that you're walking in the truth. And he's hearing that from several sources. The brethren came and told Paul. And bragged on this man, Gaius. And Paul said, I have no greater joy to hear than to hear that my children walk in truth. Speaking, I guess, primarily of Gaius, but likely of other people that he had taught. And then notice about, he also hears that his, John's children walk in truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Verse 3 is speaking specifically of Gaius. Verse 4 may include Gaius and others. But he says, that gives me great joy, John says. We don't know to what extent. We don't have the missionary journeys of John. It might be interesting if we knew. We know James stayed around the city of Jerusalem for some time. But after the first, three or four chapters, we don't have mention of John in the book of Acts. James would probably wish we didn't have mention of him because he was beheaded in chapter 12 or killed in chapter 12. We don't know what happened to John, but John was still alive. Where he preached, where he taught, we don't know. If some of these individuals that are mentioned in the Bible were one of the, was the Gaius that he was writing to, he had evidently visited other cities. And likely Paul was not the only one. These 12, I think, initially stayed in Jerusalem, and other people were scattered abroad teaching and preaching the word, but it didn't preclude these individuals from teaching outside of Jerusalem or teaching these individuals when they would be visiting Jerusalem. Okay, so his joy was that he heard that Gaius walks in truth, verse 3. And verse 4, to hear that all his children walk in truth. All of those, he speaks of Timothy, you know, in the book of Timothy as being his child in the faith. Also in verse 5, he says, I have great joy to hear of your faithfulness. That you're faithful. You're faithful in what you do. You're not just faithful in that you, quote, are a Christian, but you're faithful in your hospitality and the way you behave, the way you act toward the brethren. Not only toward the brethren that you know, but also folks who come from somewhere else, strangers. You're a hospitable individual. That's going to be in great contrast to the next man we talk about. And he's grateful. He feels joy to hear of Gaius' love and support of others. Verse 7, he talks about the need for support of those who go forth to teach the word. And he says by doing that, they became by helping, as Gaius did and as others did, they became fellow workers, or they became partners together with God in carrying out the work. In verse 9 through 11, now John writes on a subject and about an individual that maybe some people would today, if you wrote something this, you'd probably get sued. You have a lawsuit on your hands. This letter was written to Gaius. Hopefully Gaius would not show it to anybody, and it would cause no problem in today's society. But John said, now, I don't know about Gaius. Some think that Gaius was an elder. Was he an elder at the same church that Diotrephes was? I don't know. Seemed like if Gaius and Diotrephes were at the same congregation, what Diotrephes was doing wouldn't be going on. Wouldn't be happening. I don't know. Probably don't have time to go into detail on that because it really doesn't indicate. You can make assumptions. But he said, I wrote unto the church. What church? I don't know what church. The church where Gaius is? Definitely the church where Diotrephes is. I wrote unto the church, in Diotrephes. Now we have, on my outline, we have John the Beloved. And Demetrius, down in Demetrius has witnesses of the truth, the man of good report. But this man, he's forever connected with the word preeminence. We don't use that word very often in our vocabulary, although we may find it in churches today. To some extent, I've seen it over the years. It's hard. We have to be careful in making judgment here because sometimes there are situations where only one of the brethren at a particular congregation or a few of the brethren will do the work that needs to be done. At other times, there may be one individual who is like Diotrephes, who it's going to be his way or no way. I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence, he loves to be number uno, number one. And in his position, whatever that position was, it's thought maybe he was an elder. But I can't see if Gaius was an elder and Diotrephes was an elder, I don't see how they work together at the same place and this come about. I wrote on the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence, he wants to be the big one. He wants to be the man in charge. I wrote down some wording that one individual used about Diotrephes. Said he was a self-seeking overlord who dominates a congregation. A self-seeking overlord who dominates a congregation. So John had written to this congregation, or written to a congregation, but this man would not welcome him. John gets pretty tough there. Verse 10. John says, "This, if I come, I've already decided." It's almost like a situation where Paul was writing to the church of Corinth, and he listed some of their problems, and in chapter 5, I believe it was, he indicated, you know, I've already made up my mind about this situation. And here, because of the information John got, and because he felt it was valid, he's been led by the Holy Spirit also in writing this, he knows that something that Diotrephes need to be straightened out, really. Diotrephes need to be talked to. Someone needed to have him to face the truth about what he was doing and who he was appearing to be or who he was. Wherefore, if I come, John says, I will remember his deed. It's not that he was would otherwise forget him. Remembering his deeds means he's going to do something about it. I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating or going against us with malicious words, and not content therewith. In other words, he, as far as writings that John has sent, he just wouldn't have anything to do, I guess, with us, letting the rest of the congregation hear that. Also, when individuals would come to the church and maybe were looking for help from that congregation, he would tell them no. And he'd also keep the other brethren from acting in a manner that was a positive manner in that regard. So it says he was not content with just mouthing off about us, not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren. In other words, any brethren that come there seeking out their hospitality. And he forbids them that would. But he not only does that, he says he casts them out of the church. This man wanted to be main decision maker. He wanted the preeminence. He wanted to be number one. He was the one that he set the rules and everybody followed it or else. Most folks are not like that. And I don't know whether I've run into individuals. I've run into a couple over the years that had a temperament somewhat like that. But most times they'd back off and not maybe go as far as this man was going. But this was not the way that he was to act, whether he was an elder or whether he wasn't an elder. And in some way, he had a leadership position he was able to use, and it was just creating havoc as far as that particular congregation was concerned. Now, some concluding comments made in verse 11 says, you know, beloved, follow not, this is concluding comments about the situation with Diotrephes. Beloved, follow not that which is evil. Well, what has he said, or who's he talking about this being evil? Well, what's going on with Demetrius, or not Diotrephes rather? Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God. He that doeth evil hath not seen God. This man's not doing the godly thing. Don't be caught up in what this man does. Don't be caught up in his sins. You know, he may be the top businessman of the congregation. He may have $1 million. He may own the biggest house. He may drive the biggest car or whatever. May have more in his family than in church. That's probably happened in certain places. I know I remember my cousin saying she wasn't a member of the church. One of my cousins, I had a whole bunch of them, so there's no way you can narrow it down. When she and her kids went to the small Methodist church in a voting situation they had one time, they had more votes. I cautioned Churches of Christ sometimes to be sure that they had trustees of a congregation, because someone could come in and gain control, like if you just had a business meeting and just had men in the business meeting, could gain control, legal control of a congregation by sheer numbers. I don't think that lasted very long, but they did outnumber all the other individuals attending that Methodist church. But that's a bad thing to be, a bad situation to be in if you're of the mind to use that to your advantage. So here he says, don't get involved with what he does. Do not follow him. But this is evil that needs to be opposed. It needs to be dealt with. In fact, one writer wrote this, and I couldn't remember it, so I wrote it down. And it's worth remembering. Divine wrath is the reaction of divine love in the presence of sin. John is the apostle of love. Why would he be talking about this man like he is? Why is he saying this man is evil? Why is he saying that he that doeth evil is not seeing God? Well, though John is the apostle of love, divine wrath or divine anger is the reaction of divine love in the presence of sin. Does that make sense? It says something that ought to be thought about anyway. Gives us a chance to pause and think about it. Now, as opposed to that, or is contrasted to Diotrephes, appeared to be an individual, verse 12, who doesn't say he's coming to your town, coming to a congregation near you or whatever, but he basically, John is giving him a reference letter of just one verse, just a few words. But oh, what he says in those few words. Demetrius, number three man here in the chapter, Demetrius hath good report of all men. That's just opposite of what was going on with the Alcabees. And of the truth itself. There's the word truth itself. He's teaching truth. I mean, you can see how he does and how he lives and what he's teaching, and you can compare it to the truth, and truth will witness that he is a good man. He's a good report. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. And we also, so Paul says, we also bear record. And you know that our record is true. I vouch for myself. And you know from dealing with me that what I say is true. And I assume this is a man that's going to be visiting them, perhaps taking this letter to Gaius. And Paul is, or John is laying the groundwork for him. I don't, like I said, I don't know Diotrephes, maybe at this congregation. He's trying to tell the people, this man has a good report. He has witnessed of the truth. I say he's a good man, a good Christian. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Don't let anybody come up in opposition to him and send him on his way. Now, this Demetrius, the only Demetrius that's mentioned, I think, in the book of in the Bible is one in chapter 19 we mentioned a while ago, 21 through 29, talks about that Demetrius who was a silversmith in the city of Ephesus. We have no record that he ever became a Christian. Even after that uprising, Paul did remain there for a while, and he later came back through that area. I don't know whether this man ever became a Christian or not, but it really doesn't have to be a man who had been mentioned before in the Bible. But also, and I think I mentioned it in the outline I handed out, that the word Demas is a shortened form of Demetrius. I never did know that before. But in Colossians 4 and 14, we have Demas spoken of. Philemon 24, Demas, again, is one who is with Paul and who seems to be helping and aiding Paul. And by the time Paul writes 2 Timothy 4 and verse 10, though, what has happened with Demas? Demas has forsaken him, having loved the world more than he did God. So this Demetrius could be one of those or none of those. Then in his salutation. Now, he didn't write a very long letter. You maybe think, well, maybe you should have written more. But he's hoping to come there to visit him. He said, I had many things to write, but I will not with ink and pen write unto thee, but I trust I shall shortly see you. And we shall speak face to face. Peace be you. Our friends salute you and greet our friends there by name. So it was a nice personal letter. I don't know. I wouldn't think that Gaius would have this letter read to very many people. So Paul says, I have got many things to say to you, but Gaius, I'm hoping to visit there and we'll just talk face to face. And give greetings as many of these writers always did, to those that we know there, and and our friends here salute you. They want to remember you, want me to remember you. So we'll look at the book of Jude, written by Jude, thought to be the brother of Christ. It says in Jude 1:1 that the servant of Jesus Christ, the brother of James. So we'll read that chapter, that one chapter next week. and see what the book of Jude has to say to us. Appreciate your attention tonight. Good to have each of you back. Like to have a few more, but we appreciate the ones who did come back, and we hope we've learned something together as we've studied from God's Word. And we can be more appreciative of each of the books of the Bible and each of the writers of the Bible and the Bible as the truth of God. I think all here have accountable to age of Christians. If there's one here as a Christian who desires our prayers tonight, have that opportunity tonight, and we'll be glad to pray with you, pray for you. If there's one who would like to rededicate their life to Christ tonight, why not tonight, the song that we'll sing now as we stand.